Welcome to VPG's Virtual Water Cooler Chat Podcast, a platform that celebrates the rich tapestry of professional diversity, with a particular emphasis on empowering women. We aim to foster diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility, DEIA, for all, while recognizing and championing the achievements of everyone as a central pillar of our journey. In our conversations, we explore a wide spectrum of backgrounds, experiences, and perspectives, creating a vibrant mosaic that enriches our collective understanding and strengthens our commitment to diversity and empowerment. Today, we had the pleasure of chatting with Administrative Patent Judge Lilan Ren. Judge Ren, or Lilan, attended the University of Houston Law Center as a night student while working as an engineer for a major petroleum company during the day. After graduation, Lilan spent a year in private practice, followed by a clerkship at the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit. After the clerkship, Lilan returned to private practice and worked on patent litigation and prosecution matters in various technological areas, including semiconductors, oil and gas exploration, and renewable energy. Lilan joined the Patent Trial and Appeal Board, PTAB, at the United States Patent and Trademark Office, USPTO, in 2016 and has remained in this position ever since. Lilan received her undergraduate and master's degree in chemical engineering. In addition to performing her regular duties at the PTAB, Lilan actively participates in multiple committees at the board for stakeholder outreach and other efforts to strengthen the overall patent system. Outside her legal career, Lilan has volunteered in her local community for animal rescue organizations and programs to help seniors and the disadvantaged. Let us get started.
Good afternoon, Judge Ren.
Good afternoon, Ashley.
How do you write that character, Ren? Is that like the person character? Which Ren is that?
I get asked that a lot because Ren, I think, is one of the first Chinese characters that either kids or somebody who's learning the language first learns. It's pronounced the same way, but it's not written that way. It's Ren as in responsibility. So it's, I don't know if you know that word.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, I do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And Lilan is, so I'm named after my grandfather's mother, who whose name has Lan in it, which means orchid. So my grandfather, who named me, commemorated his own mother. So that's where the name came from.
I see. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that I know which character that is, because I think that there was a Taiwanese singer that he actually has that last name. So I'm thinking that is the same character.
Correct.
And you know which one I'm talking about.
Correct. And there's actually a Hong Kong actor with that last name. No relations, though. Sadly.
No relations.
Sorry to disappoint.
I actually listen to the songs a lot because a lot of them was quite good and he still sings. Let's get started. May I call you Lilan?
Yes, please.
Okay. Thank you so much for coming on to Virtual Water Cooler Chat. It is such a pleasure. And I just want to reminisce how we first met. I think it's at the Thought Leader Summit at the PTAB Bar Association. I think we held that at the USPTO in October. And you were just so warm coming. It's like, can I take a picture with you? And I'm thinking like, sure. And you... Would you mind sharing your recollection of how we met?
I think it's mutual because I saw you and you actually look very much like my best friend. And her story is actually also very interesting. Her family is also Chinese, but her family from, I think, many generations ago, essentially swam over from China to Thailand and they thrived and had great businesses and ran successful enterprises in Thailand, but they held on to their Chinese heritage. So when her family moved to the United States, she identified herself as Thai Chinese and later American Chinese. And we met in high school and we've been buddies ever since. And she doesn't live very close to me, so I do miss her all the time. So when I saw you, and to me, you look a lot like her. That's why I approached you. And I said, Ashley, you know, you look like my best friend. And you were very warm and very friendly. And I was very glad that I made the first introduction. People know me would tell you that I'm not the person to usually start a conversation. I should be better at that. But for you, I thought, I have to let Ashley know that you resemble somebody that's very close to me.
I think that is Yuan Fen.
Because that there's no other explanation. That is it was meant to be.
Yep, it is fate. Well, I'm really glad that we met. Would you tell us a little bit about Lila and your story, how you got to the States, or were you born in the States, and how you started your personal journey leading to becoming a patent attorney and eventually become an administrative patent judge? Because it's kind of inspiring to know a judge.
Well, I hope, if not inspiring, at least it's interesting. So I'm an immigrant. I'm a first generation immigrant. My father came to, out of all places, the University of Oklahoma to hold a research and later an assistant professor position in gastroenterology in the School of Medicine. So I came when I was 15. So I went to high school in, again, out of all places in Oklahoma. So I always tell people that if you find my personality a bit quirky, that's because, you know, I spent the first half of my teenage years in probably one of the biggest metropolitans on earth, being Shanghai, China, and the latter half of my teenage years in the not so metropolitan city of Oklahoma City. It was a nice, quiet, smaller, I mean, it was still the capital of the state, but it was certainly smaller than what I was used to. And so I was there, I went on to study chemical engineering. And upon graduation, I received an offer to work for an oil company in Houston. And it was through that first job that I actually got to work on a project for to commercialize a substance called carbon nanotubes. Kids these days probably don't know what carbon nanotubes are, but the discovery of carbon nanotubes actually won the Nobel Prize in chemistry in 1996. So at the time, it was all the rage. So that project that I was fortunate to participate in, I met our in-house patent attorney and our licensing folks. And the patent attorney, he actually is Asian American. He's Chinese American. And so he was a role model to me because before then, not only had I never met a lawyer, I had never met a Chinese American lawyer. And he said that he wanted to go to law school because his father was a lawyer, and also going to law school teaches you a different way of thinking. So that actually piqued my interest. As an engineer, I feel like I was always analyzing problems, thinking about ways to improve things. So a different way of thinking. I thought I should learn that. So that's when and why I went on to study law at the University of Houston, initially at night. Being an immigrant, I was like, well, just in case that I read a case and I don't understand what the case is saying, I could still come back and be an engineer. So law school actually turned out to be very interesting. And I did better than I guess I initially thought I would. So I went on to receive a recommendation to clerk at the Federal Circuit. So that was, I think, a huge step in my career. So that's when I moved to Washington, D.C. And that's when I learned not only so much about patent law, but just how to be a great person, how to be impartial, how to care so much about this country's patent system, the economics of this country, and just overall how to be an impartial and passionate jurist. And after my clerkship, I joined private practice for a few years. And at the end of my clerkship, the PTO was actually sending out recruitment messages for departing clerks because the American Invents Act was recently passed at the time. So the PTAB was at its infancy, and the PTO was trying to recruit folks with experience, folks with clerkship experience. At the time, I really wanted to join the PTAB, but my family and I, we were moving back to Texas so we could be closer to family in Oklahoma. So that's why I decided I'll join private practice at the time. So it was when the PTO opened the Dallas office that I jumped at the opportunity to apply. And that's how I was so fortunate to be appointed in my role role as an administrative patent judge, and I've been here since 2016. So that's kind of the highlights of how I got here. Engineer turned lawyer.
Then judge. Wow, that's amazing, because we don't usually get the glimpse of how practitioners sort of go into being judges. Now, do you enjoy being an APJ?
I love it. I do love it.
What do you think are the major differences between being a private practitioner and being an APJ?
This is an excellent question. The first major difference that comes to mind is that I have sufficient time to really dig into each case, to understand the issues that divide the parties, to analyze the facts and weigh evidence. There is time pressure in the sense that we have deadlines and we have statutory requirements to move case along. And I would say another difference is the single focus in my role as an APJ, that, as I briefly indicated, our goal is to apply the facts to the law as correctly and as thoroughly as our abilities could take us. This objective of mine, my colleagues, it's completely aligned with that of the organization, whether it be the PTAB or the overall USPTO. There is something very noble, at least for me, in doing my job, that I have this motivation to do the best job I can, because I know I'm doing my part to serve my country in a way. I know it's a bit cheesy, but I think this is occasion to get cheesy.
I don't think that it's cheesy. I think that it is actually, as you said, noble. People that actually are in public service amazes me sometimes, a lot of time, because a lot of attorneys with their skill set and their experience, they can certainly go into private practice and make a lot more money. But I think that there's a part of it that is upholding the cornerstone, like you said, the institution, about like protecting ideas and making sure that as a society, we progress with innovation in mind. And so that I think that that is something that I really do applaud you and your colleagues for. So,
well, thank you.
How's that for cheesy? I think that is really speaking from the heart. We can really thank our public servants enough.
Thank you. I always tell people that back in my own country, or the country that my parents are from, where I was born, I would have never been given the opportunity to clerk for a federal judge at that kind of level. In my new country, as a first generation immigrant, a naturalized citizen, there was no impedance, no obstacle. Everybody encouraged me to go for the gold, aim high. So I thank my new country for this unprecedented opportunity and trust. And that's why I do want to serve my country with this vigor, because I recognize that this opportunity wouldn't have been presented to me even in a country where I was born. So I appreciate my new country. And I just mentioned actually to a neighbor the other day that I was the first batch of immigrants to be sworn in after 9/11. And that was the only occasion that I was on TV. And the news report was to celebrate the fact that the backbone, the value of our country cannot be shaken, no matter what happens, no matter what others do to try to sabotage what we hold together as our values and principles. So I try to remember that. And this is what I can do to uphold our status, I think, as essentially as a beacon in democracy.
I could not agree with you more on that, because one, I'm also a naturalized citizen and originally from Hong Kong. And I came when I was in my teens, early teens. And when we first landed in Virginia, and then within a year, my dad mostly, but my parents decided to open a restaurant in Lawrence, Kansas. So I'm not far from Oklahoma.
I might have been there.
Yeah, well, I don't know, but you know, so because of that, if I were in Hong Kong, my parents were not in the economic class that I can actually afford to go to college or university. So the fact that I came to the States and the fact that they worked so hard and we ended up in like a college town. So I got my undergrad and also my master's degree at University of Kansas. And I also met so many amazing professors. And, you know, the fact that you're in a college town, your parents own a Chinese restaurant, everybody comes come to eat. So that is the gathering place, you know? And with that, like a lot of my American professors have taken an active interest in mentoring me, and some with like financial support, because they know that, you know, my parents were working really hard as an immigrant, and they're kind of like making their, I wouldn't say that making their ends meet, but definitely it's a struggle to send kids to college. And we also did not speak fluent English when we came. So that was definitely a struggle. But, you know, like you said, I'm really grateful to have the opportunity to sort of learn and be able to sort of basically not only survive, but thrive on having the opportunity to succeed. And I think that with yours is like your clerkship, being a judge, you know, being a successful attorney. And obviously there's a whole lot of other things in other arena that I'm sure that you're very successful at. And so we'll get to that. But I think that it is an amazing country in that sense that we have the opportunity. So with that, can we turn the topic to diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility? What does that mean to Lilan?
To me, diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility is the only way we can build a nation that is truly indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. I'm all about slogans today, but that's how I really feel, is that we are all members of this great country, this great nation. So by having this principle of acknowledging and embracing diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility, we recognize that everybody has something unique to contribute to our overall community. And then we in turn have a stronger community. And it's all about recognizing everyone as a fellow human being in my mind. It's not about what your last name is. It's not about were you born with a social security number, because I wasn't. It's about building the strongest possible community with every one of us contributing with our authenticity, our unique creativity, and our unique talent. I firmly believe that's why the greatest, the most groundbreaking innovations come from nowhere else but our own country. It's because we encourage and value everybody for who they are as human beings. Like you and I, if we didn't get to come to this country, there wouldn't be a podcast. There wouldn't be a talented virtual patent gateway as an enterprise. I don't know what I would be doing had I stayed. I don't need to go into a long personal history, but I probably wouldn't have even the opportunity to go to college. So that's talent wasted. And because this new country gave me this opportunity to fully realize my potential, however little or large the potential there is. But, you know, when we put everybody's potential together and everybody contributes to the max, that's why we have the best country. And we got to continue to do it. And I think it's just about valuing your fellow human being just by being a human. Because we're all the same, we're all humans, we all have something to contribute. I'm terrible at drawing and artsy things.
Same here.
But I'm but I'm better at other things. So that's why, just embrace everybody, and everybody has something to contribute at the table. And just why exclude? Why exclude somebody who could help in their unique way? That's how I feel.
I think sometimes people, this is just my opinion, I think sometimes people exclude others because of fear of the unknown. It's easier to sort of like not recognize other when you are not like them, you know? So I think that part of diversity, especially in like the patent industry, I think that it really will bring so much when you have a diverse pool of talents, because people have different ideas. So one of the things that I want to kind of give an example is that I don't want to do too much of a promotion for APG, but one of the things that I do believe in is growing the next generation, which is something that I would like to get your thoughts on too. You know, we have the different generations in the workforce, and a lot of time when I was still in private like practice at the law firm, as a case manager, I had issues managing the workflow and the outcome of the work products, having to handle, I don't like to use the word managing, but I'm not sure that there's a better word to basically the talents that I have on my team. Sometimes people, they have different values. So when you have case deadlines, you know, then on a team, you might have some people that will constantly be being called on to do overtime, just because they don't know how to say no, or they're just more of a team player or easygoing, versus other times there are team members that are much more comfortable at saying no for, you know, their own reasons. Now that I am sort of like working on my own vision with my team, the only thing that I really generally have to think about is like how to make sure that my team get paid. So that is a lot. I don't have to persuade a board. I don't have to persuade a committee. If I can actually make the payroll, things will happen. It's really, really empowering. So when I actually gather a team of people at VPG, especially after May, we used to have like only two younger team members. That's like between 19 and 20. After May, because I had to think about transitions and I actually got a few other people. And that sort of changed the landscape in terms of the thought process, because it's now really integrated. They are reverse mentoring me. These are like Gen Zers, and that diverse like thought process, I could no longer assume that I know what is best, or at least traditionally what is best to get the job done. I have to really listen and engage them in their thought process, and also understanding that my values are completely different from theirs. Like mine is like traditional Chinese American, just like Asian American, just like work hard, get it done. Not so. I mean, they might work hard, but it's very different. It's like, I cannot do this right now because I have XYZ that need to be done. Those are my priorities. Now, traditionally, that's not how I roll. You know, it's like you get the job done. Doesn't matter. You just like, it's almost like at all costs and at all expense. So I wonder, when we are talking about like diversity, especially involving the younger generation, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm glad you brought it up, because diversity is about diversity of everything, not just necessarily where you grew up, but your diversity of age, your diversity of background, and your diversity of experience. So I think, you know, you were surprised that the next generation has different values than you, but I think your interaction with the next generation, I'm sure, had an impact on them. I'm sure they're sitting there thinking, probably similarly to you, so like, oh, Ashley wants us to work hard. So the fact that you shared your value with them means that there's an interaction and that they have at least some exposure to your value already. So I think that is why we value diversity. We got to have the confidence to have the open mind to exchange values and to exchange ideas. And I do interact with law students on the side. For them, you know, I start by saying, I've been doing this patent law a little longer than you, to kind of set the stage that we come from different perspectives and we have different aspects of we may view things through a different lens. But I think if we kind of take the time to listen and understand each other, that's step one. And when I talk to the law students, I think when they hear about my experience as a young attorney, that sometimes at the time I had certain obstacles and roadblocks, I think they could identify with it, because it's that has not been completely eradicated in our imperfect world. And then when I bring up history, such as how Justice Ginsburg couldn't get a clerkship because of her gender, that Justice O'Connor couldn't get a job, so she had to just open up a shop in the mall, in a shopping mall, as her first job. I think even though it was a few decades ago, the next generation recognizes that although we've come a long way, this is through our collective effort that I'm able to sit here as an administrative patent judge with a PTO, talking in that role, talking to a law student. So I think through history and personal experience, you connect with each other. After that, once you kind of build some kind of understanding and rapport, then we can build on things such as getting things done. In your specific example, I'm sure the folks wanted to get things done, and perhaps we could look into why they feel like there are other things taking higher priority. And then maybe you could kind of explain to them that in the over grand scheme of things, you know, what you say should take higher priority, because one, you're the boss who's making payroll, but you know, I'm kind of assuming a little background information, but I think that's what's great about our country. There's no totalitarianism in any aspect of our society. Everything is a opportunity for people to understand each other, to come to a collective solution that everybody could understand why things are done this way. There's no, let me jam this down your throat, too bad you're not happy about it kind of thing, which, you know, that sometimes, I mean, it is more efficient, I grant you that. But I think for the long-term growth of our society and the cohesiveness of society, and also at work, to have team members that want to do their best, you want them to have initiative, then I think kind of talking it out, explaining to people why it needs to be done. And, you know, maybe you would be convinced by your colleague and say, okay, maybe your other things should take priority. And then we'll just reprioritize our list so they're aligned. But I agree with you. I'm the person who's like, let's work hard. If that's my stereotype, I'm proud to have that stereotype, because I think for me to get here and for you to get to where you are, that's a value that I'm holding on very strongly to. But I think that's part of the American value too. The pioneers, they worked very hard. Our forebears, they worked very hard to establish the foundation of our society, the Constitution. And our role models, Justice O'Connor and Justice Ginsburg, the like. So let's work hard on everything.
Yeah, I think part of it is that, so I started my company, well, actually, we just passed 4 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I have to say that when I first came out, I wasn't, the vision then was completely different from what I have now. And I also not 100% sure exactly where it's going to take me. I have a general direction.
Yeah, right? That's great. Keep on evolving. Yeah.
And then so that was like, sometimes people was like, what exactly do you do? I'm like, anything I want.
That's why we have the freedom in this country for justice and liberty for all. That's as long as you are contributing, the sky is the limit.
I've always done litigation. I've done construction litigation when I first started. It's completely different from PDAP.
Of course.
And then eventually I got my ABA approved paralegal certificate from George Washington. And then after that, before I graduated with my certificate, I got hired by a firm that no longer exists, Howie. And then after that, I went to my previous firm and I was there for almost 19 years. I've always known that I was really good workhorse. I can work. But one of the author is from strength to strength. I'm going to have to go back and take a look at. He was the president of American Enterprise Institute. I'm going to have to look that up. But from strength to strength, one of the things that he talked about is success addiction. People that are in the intellectual community, a lot of times, I think lawyers is one of the profession, and then another one is doctors. They just really, because their profession actually encourages them to really work hard, and also making sure that adrenaline that they get from, say, winning a case or doing something. And for me, it's just like, it's easier to get to do the work and not rock the boat and just keep doing it. And I, you know, for a liberal arts degree, I got a pretty decent pay. So why not? You know, my parents, they were not highly educated. So if they see their daughter actually, doing pretty well, you know, so we don't have to worry about her. And so that was this constant encouragement that it doesn't matter, you know, that you don't necessarily take time to develop other interests and just keep doing the work that you do. So you have income security, you have stability in life, and it should be all good. So I think that's how I really lived for a long time until my dad passed in 2017, because I didn't feel like that I need to justify to one of my parents, like the strong younger one of the two, basically. I used to have like long talks with my dad about like my work. And sometimes it's like, I really don't know that I really want to do this. And he was like, well, you will be fine. You know, it's that whole immigrant mindset that you should be lucky to have a job. And you should be very grateful that you have a really good job. And so I never really questioned that until I saw how fast and how fragile life is. Because he fell and then he passed within 4 hours. And we were rushing him to emergency room. And then basically they certify him within 4 hours. And when you see life flashes like that, and in a litigation, I don't really think that, I think litigation as a practice, it's just like, especially in private practice, there's so much like stress. I didn't think that I can handle balancing that expectation versus handling taking care of my mom. Because my mom does not drive. She claims she doesn't speak English, but I always asked her, I said that, what have you been speaking all these years? But I think that I was a little bit burned out because I also did not know how to say no to people. And so being years of people pleasers and stuff like that, I just got really burned out. And eventually I decided that I'm going to make a change. So that's when I first had an idea about leaving a firm. But, you know, I've been to other firms before. So how would that actually differ in my mind? And I don't know exactly what it is. So I saved up some money and I was going to sort of explore how it would work as a consultancy. So that was 4 years ago. And now it's 4 years later.
Thank you for sharing that story. It's captivating. And just so you know, I actually lost my father in 2016 to a sudden accident also. So I just had listening training. I'm not supposed to say I know how you feel, but since we lost our fathers around the same time due to unforeseen circumstances, losing somebody that close to you get you to restart thinking what life is all about. But I started thinking about life a little before that, because people who know me well will tell you that I'm very justice-minded. So if I see unfairness in the world, and we have so much of it, it actually physically pains me. So litigation never worked all that well for me for obvious reasons that we don't need to go into the specifics. So I'm glad that I have this job as an administrative patent judge. And I agree with you that as immigrants, we are of the mindset that without a job, we have no family to turn to. So job security is very important. There's nothing wrong with that. That's just part of our background as immigrants. We don't have the safety net that maybe folks with many generations of family in the same place have, but that's okay. That's what makes immigrants to be more innovative, I think. We take more risks. That's why we stood up and left and came to a brand new piece of land. These are all attributes that make our country better, that we have risk takers, we have people who work hard along with everybody else. Not everybody has to be risk takers or hard workers, like work yourself to the point of being burnt out.
I think the problem is that I was burned out, but I didn't even recognize that I was burned out.
Right. Yeah.
It's like the happiness part. I was talking to a friend, I was like, well, happiness is not part of the equation when you go to a job. Happiness is like, that was really instilled in my mind. It's like, you go to work, they pay you, you get a job done.
It's a job. Yeah. That's
job,
why you do,
right?
A job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. They don't pay you to full glory. So that is completely different from the generations now, right? So it really difficult. And I think one of the things that I really enjoy seeing how VPG evolved is that I actually got a chance to start writing. And I never really realized how much I enjoy creative writing. So I wrote two books. Actually, I wrote three, but I wrote two books. Two books was published in print, and I just have like the launch of the second book. And basically the premise of the book, it has to do with leadership and team building in the ecosystem that consists of all these animals. And I sort of created all my team, and I asked each of my team members, what animal would you like to be? So we have a whole, I'm the owl. Yes, I do. I mean, and then somehow we got an octopus, but I was like, can we actually have an octopus in the rainforest? I'm not sure. But that has been really interesting, and it's really engaging. I was really surprised as how engaged that became. And I think that is going to turn into training material, a training ground. I actually started having the second book translated into Chinese and also Korean. Because my illustrator is Korean. Remember, I cannot draw. She can.
Yeah.
So that was really quite amazing. But that we are going to turn it into a community engagement. So my illustrator is Michelle. She lives in Austin, Texas.
Oh, good. You should come and visit then.
Yes, I do. I asked her to look out for a coffee or a boba place, and we're going to do a coffee or boba collab because I'm doing it in Virginia for the first book, Building a Leadership Habitat. I've never really promoted it. I just like give it out to people. And then I got to know some published author this last year in 2023. And then I started learning and growing based on their teachings and their sharing of their insights. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to just like, I wrote the book already. So maybe I should just go ahead and figure out what people would say. It is on Amazon, but I'm not that famous yet. A lot of time I go to coffee shop or boba shop to basically do work and write. So this time I was like, well, maybe I should just do a collab, because the second book's name is Collaborating in Competitive Ecosystems. So if I do a play on word of coffee collab or boba collab, that's kind of cool. So I am doing three in Virginia, one in Atlanta. I'm asking Michelle to scout out what is a good place in Austin, and I'm going to go visit her. And I said that if no one show up, you and I would have our session. And we basically would just talk, because I haven't seen her, and she came to Virginia like two times. So I said, well, the next time is me to come. So That was really quite interesting. And that's kind of how I engage with the next generation. And more often than I think, it's a lot of the reverse mentoring, reverse coaching on technology. And it's really interesting to see the glimpse of how they see the world. So one last question. Stereotypically, Asian Americans tend to not be necessarily deemed as being eye for leadership or leadership or management positions. And so there's like bamboo ceilings. How do you think we can change that?
Well, I wish I had a simple answer for it. And, you know, I myself, I don't necessarily can say that, you know, I've made my way to any prominent leadership position. But, you know, I do hope to show as with myself as an example that it's possible that even a first generation immigrant speaking with an accent could be in a judicial role that's upholding the Constitution, so to speak. There are many things we could do to go for the leadership role if that you're so inclined to do it. So for example, programs like the one that you're doing, that you're devoting time and energy to, certainly helps me to kind of think about my journey here, where I should go by interacting with other attorneys, women and or men in a similar situation. So it's everybody has to make our own effort, whether it's large or small, that we can then collectively bring about improvements. And one thing I always tell myself is to stay the course. Like I said, in this imperfect world, it can be very easy to be discouraged. I myself, you know, in the past, when I encountered stereotyping, other things throughout my career, sometimes these challenges are hard to deal with because it's, you know, it feels so wrong and so unfair. But I remind myself, you know, the flip side is there are so many people out there who have taken the time to reach out to me, to mentor me, and those in the society who have the confidence to have the open mind to recognize what I can bring to my to the table. So then, you know, let's take a deep breath and keep going, not necessarily ignoring the obstacles, but understand that obstacles will always be there. And you just kind of have to kind of overcome it and keep going. It might take some more time, but I go back to the example that just 50 years ago, if you're a certain gender, you could be top of your class from Stanford Law School, and then you go open up a shop in the mall because no white shoe or no any law firm will hire you. And I also remind myself that it is human nature, not necessarily the best aspect of human nature, but it is human to kind of have this tendency to stereotype because it's easier. And like Ashley, you were saying earlier, there's a certain innate fear like, oh, you know, I don't know this person. Why bother opening up to new possibilities and new experiences? So in the Chinese culture that I'm familiar with is replete with this type of human nature, let's just call it. But that's what civilization is. We go from the Middle Ages to the Renaissance, and now here we are. We have a highly advanced civilized society. We evolve and to improve for a better society. So going back down to earth for leadership positions is that stay the course and do help and support each other. Kind of like Ashley, you're doing this program, you seek out possible speakers, and I'm honored to be one of them. Just look for opportunities. Not necessarily this opportunity will get you somewhere, will get you something immediately that's beneficial. Just help and support each other. And I also advocate for getting involved in professional groups, not necessarily diversity groups. If you're passionate about patent law, get involved with AIPLA. If you're passionate about something else, for example, I help out with local pet rescues. That's an issue I'm passionate about. Then just be out there. Let people see that you care about the community, you care about this nation. And then that's whether it's specifically related to Asian American issues or not, or whether it's related to pan law issues or not. I just feel like because I want to be a member of the society, I want to be out there alongside with everybody else, whether it be rescuing pets, whether it be talking about the latest federal circuit decision, it's that I'm out there to make the positive changes I want to see in my society. And that's I think the only way to make inroads on this path for equality, so that we all have the opportunity to go for the leadership positions that our talent allows us to do.
Yeah, I could not agree with you more. Speaking for me only, in the past, I've already kind of seen myself progressing. It's not without struggle. It is actually a constant struggle because I just want to kind of like work hard. It's okay for me not to be seen, but nowadays, I'm realizing that, for example, for those who wants to advance in leadership and management, sometimes you just have to make it known that you want it. Because people do not read mind. So how do they know that you want something if you don't speak up? So I think sometimes we owe ourselves.
For sure.
That particular, we owe ourselves to fight for ourselves. If we want for something, sure, we should definitely speak up.
Whether stand it happens, up and speak.
Yep. Yeah. Whether it happens or not, it doesn't matter. I think it's nothing venture, nothing gain. If you want something, go for it. And if it doesn't happen, then evaluate along the way to see what went wrong. Maybe nothing went wrong, but maybe there's something that you could improve for the next time. So it might improve your chance to be in the leadership or the management position. But if not, I think through the constant tweaking and also speaking up and showing up.
Correct.
Because if you don't show up, people don't know that you're there.
Right. I agree with you. I think our shared culture sometimes has this aspect of, oh, you know, if I work hard, then people should recognize it and should, you know, reward me. But that's why we have these trainings and these interactions. You know, the culture in this country is slightly different. You got to stand up and speak out very loud. You know, I want this role. And then you work hard for it. You always work hard, but you got to let people know. And like you said, if it doesn't happen the first time, you try, you try it again. And to stay the course. That's why I've kind of emphasized on not to be discouraged, because it is kind of, it can be easy to be discouraged. It seems sometimes so far out of reach, but that's where you kind of have to mentally kind of be strong and tell yourself that I have the strength to work hard and I have the strength to persevere, because it just takes that kind of effort. Like, Justice Ginsburg and Justice O'Connor got us here. Now that we're women and there's no issue getting a job, now it's on us to take our society further, to advance, improve further.
Well, thank you. With that, I really want to thank for our audience that you take the time to share your insights with us. Have a wonderful weekend. We are snowing here, I guess not so much in Texas, but that's the great thing about technology. We can actually have this virtual water cooler chat on screen. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.